6:16.
With absolutely no preparation. there was a bit of a misunderstanding. Okay. Prasa jatikva filata bura puja shrayas. Prasa jatikva filata puja shrayas. Actually, we'll do that. We'll do a rerun. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Does anyone offhand know the proper meter for this sloka? Otherwise, we'll stick with the. That will do. Prasajatikva pilata buja shrayas. Prasajatikva pilata buja shrayas. Tadashraya vyakta padadvijas priyam. Tadashraya vyakta padadvijas priyam. Kvachit karachit tari chakratastrasan. Kvachit karachit tari chakratastrasan. Sakyam vidhate baka kanka gridhai. Pray. Sakyam vidhate baka kanka gridhai. Prasajatikva pilata puja shrayas. Tadashraya vyakta padadvijas priyam. Kvachit karachit tari chakratastrasan. Sakyam vidhate baka kanka gridhrai. Prasajatikva pilata puja shrayas. Tadashraya vyakta padadvijas priyam. Kvachit karachit tari chakratastrasan. Sakyam vidhate baka kanka gridhrai. Someone else, ladies? No. Prasajati becomes more and more attached. Vapi Sometimes. Latabuja ashraya. Who takes shelter of the soft arms of his beautiful wife, which are like creepers. Tad ashraya, who were sheltered by such creepers. Avyaktapada, who sing unclear songs. Dvija spriha, desiring to hear birds. Kvachit, sometimes. Kadachit, somewhere. Hari Chakrata Trasan, being afraid of the roaring sound of a lion. Sakyam, friendship. Vidhate, makes. Baka Kanka Gridhrai, with cranes, herons, and vultures. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, responsively. Sometimes the living entity in the forest of material existence takes shelter of creepers and desires to hear the chirping of the birds in those creepers, being afraid of roaring lions in the forest. He makes friends with cranes, herons, and vultures. Purport. In the forest of the material world, there are many animals and birds, trees and creepers. Sometimes the living entity wants to take shelter of the creepers. In other words, he wants to be happy by being embraced by the creeper-like arms of his wife. Within the creepers, there are many chirping birds. This indicates that he wants to satisfy himself by hearing the sweet voice of his wife. In old age, however, he sometimes becomes afraid of imminent death, which is compared to a roaring lion. To save himself from the lion's attack, he takes shelter of some bogus swamis, yogis, incarnations, pretenders, and cheaters. Being misled by the illusory energy in this way, he spoils his life. It is said, Harin vinam ritim na taranti. No one can be saved from the imminent danger of death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Hari indicates the lion as well as the Supreme Lord. To be saved from the hands of Hari, the lion of death, one must take shelter of the Supreme Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People with a poor fund of knowledge take shelter of non-devotee cheaters and pretenders in order to be saved from the clutches of death. In the forest of the material world, the living entity first of all wants to be very happy by taking shelter of the creeper-like arms of his wife and hearing her sweet voice. Later, he sometimes takes shelter of so-called gurus and sadhus, who are like cranes, herons, and vultures. And thus he is cheated both ways by not taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. The translation again. Sometimes the living entity in the forest of material existence takes shelter of creepers and desires to hear the chirping of the birds in those creepers. Being afraid of roaring lions in the forest, he makes friends with cranes, herons, and vultures. Omagyana tamaranda sya gananjana shalakaya chakshu ummalitam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual masters are trying to kindly open my eyes with the torchlight of Vedic knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto their lotus feet. So please, first all the Vaishnavas, bestow some blessings on this miserable creature who didn't prepare anything for the Bhagavatam class. So the double dilemma of the living entity in material life is pointed out here in the last sentence by Srila Prabhupada, that first of all, we're suffering in this material world, being very small and insignificant creatures, and we're being prodded continually by material desires, and therefore we're taking shelter of the objects of the senses. And when those objects of the senses are failing to deliver us from our suffering condition, we're sometimes seeking liberation, and then we're taking shelter of those who can, those who we think are promising to deliver it. And we're cheated in both directions, both in our desires to enjoy and our desires to be delivered and liberated. So the nature of the living entity is that he's part of Krishna's marginal energy. He's by nature full of Satchidananda, full of knowledge, full of bliss, eternal. But in this condition in which we're so strongly identifying with our material body and our false ego, we've become practically spiritually dormant, and we find ourselves very insignificant. Just like they say, there's a small crustacean or a small crab that lives on the shore, this marginal energy means that we're living on the shore between the ocean and the land. So this seafront, it's a very unstable place. There's pounding waves, there's rock pools, there's sometimes scorching sun. And in that condition, the small creatures in the sea, they have to take shelter. So it's said that when the predators come, or when the hot sun comes, these small crustaceans, they always take shelter of the water, because the water is a very vast, it's a very vast environment and many places to hide. And it's also the natural environment for these creatures. So rather than take shelter of a rock pool, you know, which the water may dry up and one will be exposed very easily, people try to, well, at least these crustaceans, they try to take shelter in the deep water. So the living entity is like that. We have hopes to experience life, you know, in this material world, enjoying ourselves and being very independent and making plans and schemes and then having them gradually fulfilled, you know, due to our intelligence and our good fortune and the support of all of our friends and family, and using our intelligence and using our resources. And that way we have high hopes, you know, of making it big time in the material world. Or if we have a different personality type, maybe we don't want to be disappointed, so we'll make smaller plans, but still we're very determined that these should be fulfilled. But the reality is of anybody, who's existing within the material world knows that time after time our plans are being checked and humbled. We may have just a small plan, just that in one day we would like to accomplish a few things off our to-do list. You know, especially devotees, they have unlimited items that they would like to accomplish each day. You know, and coming to Radhadesh, I had some main objectives, you know. Okay, I wanted to spend some time with my son and my husband a little bit also, but I also came for purification. And I was thinking, what does purification mean? Well, I guess I was thinking in kind of external terms, you know, then I should be rising early, you know, chanting extra rounds, attending the class every day, and a hearing, walking in the forest will be nice, you know, because in South Africa it's winter. As it turned out, the South African winter is kind of more pleasant than the Radhadesh summer. But then I was also thinking, when I got here, I also really needed some serious senior association. And I heard so many plans. Okay, there's French classes, that would be nice, because in South Africa I'm preaching with many students who are from the Congo and other French-speaking places. Then there's three different sanghas in the evening that the ladies have upstairs. Then there's a Vanaprastha sangha, and then there's a Bhagavad Gita class every evening. And then so much service I could do for the deities, which would be very nice to dress. Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra again would be, you know, very nectarian, very regulating, very purifying. I must do that. And then, of course, I must, I'd like to cook for the devotees, and the list kind of expanded, you know. And these were all of the things I thought I had to include, you know, to try to become purified that I wanted to do in my stay in Radhadesh. And somehow or other, because of the, you know, the fallen nature, we're lucky if we can tick two things off, you know, just two things. Even getting up in the morning, you know, is a struggle. Sometimes you make a plan, you go to bed in time, and then you didn't charge the cell phone and the alarm doesn't go off. Just small things. And what to speak of our bigger situation in life. Quite often the material world becomes overwhelming. That's the nature of the influence of the mode of ignorance, is that things really feel overwhelming. You know, decisions that we have to make, the financial pressures of trying to survive in the material world. There's very few people that don't have those hanging over their head. Maybe a few very simple brahmacharis and fortunate devotees taking shelter of the temple. So financial worries, health issues are pressing. Spiritual and material challenges in many ways. Sometimes just the pressure of having so much service, so much to do in life, that our mind becomes very, very disturbed, very frustrated, and we want to take shelter. You know, so the principle is there that we want to take shelter, and we have two choices. You know, if we're caught up in the mode of passion, different pressures and different anxieties, then we can take shelter in the mode of goodness, or we can take shelter in the mode of ignorance. So taking shelter in the mode of goodness, it requires good association and good training, actually, that one has to stop and think, why am I in this situation? You know, why am I feeling difficulty? Why is my mind not peacefully absorbed in Krishna? Let me analyze my day. Let me think things over and discuss with a friend and set some priorities. You know, let's examine things and get it all straightened out. You know, this is the mode of goodness. The mode of ignorance means it's too overwhelming. I can't deal with it. It's like I don't know what to do. Therefore, you pull the covers over your head and you take shelter of sleep. Or you take shelter of some distractions, like spending longer than necessary on Facebook or on computer games, or, you know, some activity that procrastinates and buries the problem. And then, of course, because you accomplish so little, taking shelter of extra sleep and nonsense activity, then the problems only expand and become worse and worse. It can get to the point where we have quite serious issues in our devotional service and in our spiritual life, because we're not facing up, you know, just to simple things like that, like managing time. Everyday devotees need to accomplish certain things in order just to maintain their status quo, you know, on the spiritual platform. We see that in the material world, it's likened here to a forest. So just to maintain a safe position in that forest, it requires spiritual activity. You know, spiritual life is, it's really about cultivation. We're not living in a neutral environment in the material world. It's actually like a huge current. And Radha Desh, maybe you don't feel it so much, but you step outside the door in any city. And it's powerful, actually. Even here, the forces of material energy are within us. They say that lust sits in the mind and the intelligence and the senses. But even in the external environment, it's very powerful. 2.5 years ago, when I first left Radha Desh and arrived in South Africa, I was told, you know, it's a very dangerous country. And Kadamba Kanana Maharaj, he would really hammer it home continuously. He would tell me stories of one rape after a murder, after a theft, after a hijacking, you know, really wanting to hammer it home. So I would, you know, take things seriously there. So for a few days, I didn't leave the temple property. They told me I wasn't allowed. But in the end, you know, with my nature, I just can't sit still. So I decided to go for a walk. So the first thing is I came out of the temple gate, turned left, and the first three lampposts had billboards on them. You know, so the first picture was an advertisement for a Sangoma, you know, Dr. Chabalala, something like this. Sangoma means like a witch doctor, a tantric. And he was advertising, get back your lost love, earn more money, you know, attract the partner of your dreams, things like this. And I was thinking, oh, you know, what a promise. And then I took a few more steps, and there's a big electrical kind of a big circuit box and a big cabinet with another poster on it. And this one says enlargements. And I was like, enlargements, you know, big letters. And I was looking, and very, very graphic pictures that had to have been photoshopped, I have to say. They were advertising that you can enlarge, you know, any feature of your material body except for the brain. They didn't include the brain. But, you know, there were pictures of posteriors, frontiors, and, you know, especially genitals, you know, kind of very sizable. And I was thinking, whoa, you know, in South Africa, it's really going to be in my face here, you know, the material energy. So, yeah, it's very prized, you know, that women should have, you know, big backsides and big breasts, and men should be very, you know, well endowed. And I was like, oh, you know, Krishna. So a few more steps, and there was another advertisement there, you know, on the next lamppost, free abortions. You know, free abortions, you know, but then you pay for the health care, you know, that comes afterwards, and in your own home. You know, very, very convenient. I was thinking, there we see the progression, you know, that first of all, people are encouraged to have many material desires and hankerings and to try and get those fulfilled by hook or by crook. And then, then lust really sets in. And after lust, one has so many problems. And this is daily life in the material world. Even devotees, we think we're free from these forms of gross sense of gratification. But if you really think you're immune, then Krishna might, Krishna might give you a surprise. You just become a little loose, you know, in chanting your japa just for a few days or a few weeks. And then, you know, the next thing will happen is that lust, you know, starts to make its presence felt again in the senses. And then, you know, when you're awake, yeah, the material energy sets in. There's no difficulty. It's a divine energy. And the living entities, ahankara vamudhatma, you know, the false ego will make an ass out of us. We'll be defeated. So therefore, we need to take shelter. And we can either take shelter in this material forest and all kinds of promising activities. The living entity who's wandering here, he's likened, they liken the arms of his wife to be like creepers, very slender and very graceful. And he would like to become entangled in those creepers. However, creepers are nothing really to take shelter of. Yeah, you know, creepers, they're just a very slender vines. You know, they actually need a support. I guess that's why they liken the arms of the wife, you know, to creepers, because they entangle and they bind. You know, even in Radhadesh, you know, down below the Prasadam tent there, there's some stinging nettles, you know, and different kinds of creepers that wind themselves around things, and you try and pull them out, but they're powerful, they're strong. You know, they really have you in their grip. But there's no substance to them. They don't have any strength. When the wind blows, they're knocked over. They don't have any, you know, any real strength in them. So you take shelter of those creepers, you just become entangled. But they won't really give you any protection. Prabhupada likened the wife and the children, at best they're fallible soldiers. And sometimes in this description of the material world, they're also likened to jackals and witches and tigers and so forth. Because if something is promising to offer you shelter, but it can't deliver, you know, then it's very dangerous, actually. And it's very foolish to really pursue that. That's why in the Isho Upanishad, that of different types of people who are to be condemned, the Isho Upanishad says that those who are presenting themselves as sources of knowledge, and yet they're actually sources of nescience, they fall to the darkest regions of hell. And Srila Prabhupada explains that these are people who present themselves as being sources of shelter for others, especially spiritual teachers, yogis and false gurus, etc. These people are really to be contemned. So therefore, taking shelter. We should always think ourselves very insignificant, always in need of shelter. It's not that we should just think like that, but practically we are like that. Srila Prabhupada, it's a well-known comment that when visiting a life member's house where there was great opulence and they were being served, you know, with such respect, Srila Prabhupada commented to the devotees, you know, in such circumstances, I'm always praying that I don't fall down. And when he mentioned that, the disciple said, Srila Prabhupada, you'll never fall down. And he goes, because I'm praying like that, that's why I'll never fall down. And of his disciples, he commented that my only complaint about them is that they're not sufficiently afraid of Maya, you know, the material energy. So therefore, how to take shelter? How to take shelter? Srila Prabhupada provides the framework, you know, of how to take shelter, how to structure our day so that the mind will become less troublesome. You know, we have a morning program of rising early. Jayabhadra told me that someone here just recently gave a class, and they said that that when it comes to detachment and renunciation, the first thing we need to do is detach from our bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. I thought that was nice. Okay, so detaching from the bed, rising early, and attending the morning program is very important. And in a community, it's so important that many people do it together. Like the first few days I was here in Radhadesh, I was observing that when I lived here before, Mangal Aarti was like a very, it was a big occasion, you know, 20, 25, 30, 35 devotees at Mangal Aarti. And I noticed how it had diminished a little. And I was thinking, yeah, well, college students are not here. But also different temples, sometimes they go through cycles, you know, because one or two people skip Mangal Aarti. And then everyone's thinking, well, they're not here to notice. And, you know, so therefore, if I also sleep in, well, everyone is doing it, you know, it can't. And so-and-so senior person is doing it, therefore, you know, it can't be so terrible that once in a while I'll miss. You know, so today, of course, I missed. You know, and the caught up by the alarm clock that didn't go off and a lot of motive ignorance. But really, if we're missing, you know, these very important things, which is remembering and meditating on the qualities of the spiritual master during Gurvastakam and worshipping Srimati Tulsi Devi. Some temples were meditating on the avoiding 10 offences, also praying to Lord Nrisingadev, offering obeisances to the Vaishnavas. You know, these things are like gradually putting on our armour plating to protect us, you know, from the material energy. How does that manifest in the day? You know, when you become weak, it manifests when anger enters, when critical mentality towards Vaishnavas comes into the mind, sensual weakness, philosophical doubts. Just like I was in the kitchen yesterday, and kitchen, I don't know what it is about it. Because there's so much activity and there's pressure there to be ready on time, it can really be the scene of a lot of motive passion, you know, in the kitchen. And it can be a place sometimes where fights break out, you know. I think in Radhadesh, while I was here, I had very few fights. I used to pretty much get on with everybody, apart from, you know, maybe two or three really famous incidents that took place in the kitchen. You know, it was always the kitchen because that's where my false ego is invested the most, you know. Therefore, if there's a conflagration, a situation, it's definitely going to be in the kitchen. So, yeah, yesterday I saw some people were under pressure for their service and, there were some heavy words, you know, spoken a little bit, some words of false ego. Yeah, so these things are all manifesting. They're already in the heart, but the morning program will defuse them. It will just give us that edge, you know, to maintain purity of consciousness. And consciousness is really all we have. What is it that we take with us? What is it that determines our experience in life? It's just that, just our consciousness, actually. Someone can be in the middle of the most difficult circumstances, and they're blissful. You know, they're very transcendental. And other people, they can be in such a nice situation, you know, amongst devotees with a very beautiful service. And it's like in the cartoons where you see a big cloud, you know, over their head and the forks of lightning coming down. You know, they're very unappreciative and suffering and full of miseries. So therefore, we need to take shelter of what Srila Prabhupada's given us, this morning program. And then we need to also to really take shelter of the devotees. Jai. Sisi Jagannath Baladev Subhadramarani, Shishi Radha Gopinath, Lidhavi Shaki, Shishi Gorni Tai Shiguram Paramparaki, Jai. Yeah, please take shelter of Krishna's devotees, you know. Try to serve them as much as possible. Try and find little ways that you can see devotees are needing assistance and then try to give that. Try to absorb the mind always in good advice and build up a support team. The senior devotees of this movement, in particular, yeah, my Guru Maharaj was always doing it. He deliberately cultivated particular devotees and relationships with them so he could turn to them for support in times of making decisions. For most of us, it's not possible anymore that we can write to our spiritual master for advice on lots of things. You know, either they left this world, or they're very busy, or they have many disciples. They can't communicate with us very often like that. So therefore, we have to find amongst our community devotees who are able to support us and who can offer very good and clear decisions. So if we can consult like that, we'll also find some shelter. And of course, we take shelter in devotional service. The time of death is coming very close. You know, they say that life is like it's a bit like a subway. You know, it's like a tube underground. There's no escape. And at one end of the tube, there's like a, this is how I heard it described. I'm not sure where it was from, actually, but it's like a piston. Bhakti Nrisimha Maharaj, he was describing it like this. Sometimes in a machine, there's a tube, and on one end, there's a piston. It's like a cylinder, you know, that's pushing relentlessly forward, you know. And we're stuck somewhere inside that tube. But at the other end, you know, from the piston, there's a blazing fire. So we're being driven by time towards death. And on the way, of course, you know, there's hanging in this corridor are many sharp, you know, spikes and blades coming out from the side. These are all of the anxieties and irritations and pains of material existence. But nestled amongst them all, different tasty fruits. So somehow or other on the way, you know, being driven along by the force of time, we're trying to edge in between all of the, you know, the difficulties of life, you know, to enjoy some sense gratification here and there. But we're being stung and prickled, you know, all the time, and being relentlessly driven towards death. So devotional service, from what I can see, is one thing that will really help us at the time of death. One of my favorite types of books to read is stories of how devotees live their life and leave their bodies. You know, there's some amazing books out like that. There's one about five Vaishnavis who left their bodies in different circumstances. I saw a new one at the BLS compiled by Giriraj Swami about Sridhar Maharaj, Kirtidar, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, Jayananda, and I was just reading from those. And you see the devotees who left their bodies in a very successful way with their mind really fixed. It was because during their life they were fully dedicated, you know, to devotional service to the point that they had a mission, you know. It wasn't just that Krishna consciousness is my way of life, or Krishna consciousness is something I fit into my life, but Krishna consciousness is my mission. You know, they were really driven in devotional service, very responsible, fully dedicated, endeavoring beyond the limits, you know, of their ordinary capabilities to please Krishna and the spiritual master through their service. So we take shelter of devotional service by having that in our day in a very regular way, something that's very challenging, something that will absorb our minds. If our service is little things that we fit in here and there, then we have to really think it over. Maybe we should take that service more seriously, try to perfect it, or try to increase our service, or try for something more challenging, try for something that will push us, you know, to our capabilities. Yeah, we should really try to be absorbed in serving Krishna. And these are the things that give shelter. So we'll read a little bit here. That the word Hari in the sloka, what do we see in the sloka here? Like a lion. Where is it? Hari chakrata trasan. Being afraid of the roaring sound of a lion. So this lion, Srila Prabhupada said, is the lion of death. So to be saved from the lion of death, one must take shelter of the supreme Hari, the supreme personality of Godhead. So this taking shelter is the sign of an intelligent person. People with a poor fund of knowledge, however, Srila Prabhupada says, they're trying to take shelter in non-devotee cheetahs and in pretenders. So, of course, the non-devotees are like this. You know, they're searching for salvation and very foolish things. Especially in family members. I remember many, many years ago in Christchurch in New Zealand, one of the devotees, she had five children under the age of 7. And one day in the kitchen, she just fainted. And she never woke up. She just went into a coma. So for a few days, she was in the coma before she left her body. So we would go to the hospital and we would chant with her, you know, chant and try and do different, you know, there would be kirtan, the deities were there, the devotees were praying, putting different sacred items on her body and really trying to give her shelter. Because although she was in a coma, obviously the soul inside is going through some transformations and some experiences on the inside. So the interesting thing was that one of the devotees knew this lady, and also on the other side of the corridor, in intensive care, another boy who had just had a car accident, and he was also in a coma. So we would watch sometimes from the corridor, and the atmosphere, it was just like night and day. On one side of the corridor, Monica, this lady, she was lying there, and there was Prabhupada chanting, all the devotees praying for her, mahar, you know, flower arrangements, maha prasadam flowers and garlands and pictures of Krishna. The deities were there, and the devotees very intensely meditating, very calm, very wonderful atmosphere. On the other side, there was this young boy who'd come off his motorbike, and his family, you know, were crowded around, and they were in great anxiety, and they were crying, they were lamenting, they were touching his body. And this boy who knew both families, he went to go and visit this boy, and he saw that the family had put earphones, you know, with some music. They didn't have MP3 players in those days, but it was like a Walkman, you know, Walkman cassettes, you know, so they were playing something. So he said to the family, you know, what are you doing there? And they said, we want him to stay, we want him to stay. And in fact, they were all shouting at him, you know, just stay, just hang on, don't leave us, like this. And they were saying, so we want to play his favorite music. And the devotee was saying, so what are you playing? And he says, we're playing Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath, you know. So for those of you who don't know Black Sabbath, it's like the most intense tamasic heavy metal music you could possibly hope to find, you know. I remember once I saw an album cover of Black Sabbath, you know. This is when I was a non-devotee, and it was sort of very gloomy and very black, and it described a lake in which a black swan was floating upside down in the water, you know, and it was filled with demons and monsters and like creatures that come up from the underworld. This is Black Sabbath, you know, so... After a good night of head bashing to that, you know, that this boy obviously, you know, felt great satisfaction, you know. There's a taste in the mode of ignorance, actually. So this boy very much liked Black Sabbath, and at the moment of death, when his, it can be that in a coma, your karma is complicated. So you're waiting there. You're stuck in the transit lounge, Tulsi. Tulsi's, father, yeah, wrote a book like that about his experience waiting to die, stuck in the transit lounge. So this boy was in there undergoing goodness knows what experiences. Maybe there were Yamadutas. Maybe his body obviously was wanting to die, forcing him to die, but due to some attachment, he was still there. And the family members are telling him, hang on, stay. And black metal is, you know, pounding through his eardrums. And what a way, you know, what a way to leave the world. It must have been so full of confusion and torn emotions. And whew. And the other girl, just due to some, you know, the causeless mercy of the devotees actually to give her shelter, and due to her own good nature, because she was always busy in serving the devotees. Her five children, she would bring them to the temple every day, always, you know, be telling them about Krishna. Somehow or other, her experience was completely different, just like night and day, you know, so different. And, of course, real shelter means that at the time of death, we achieve the proper destination for the soul. We attain Krishna's lotus feet. So death... It may be like the jaws of a lion, you know, for the non-devotee. And when the I used to like these wildlife movies, you know, when I was a kid, you know. So when the what are these little these warthogs, you know, when the warthogs or the springboks or the, you know, the deer, they're in the jaws of the lion, you know, you see them there. They're kicking and they're struggling and they're trying to get out. Sometimes the lion appears to let them go just for a moment, you know, like people who have a remission of their terminal cancer just for a little while, you know, they think, oh, okay, that was close, but now I'm fine, you know, then the lion like this. Again, he, you know, he'll have another go and then maybe just play with them a little bit like that. But at the same time, you see the same lion, you know, picking up its cubs and moving them to places of safety, you know, whenever there's danger. So for the cub, you know, to feel those jaws, you know, around its neck, it's like ultimate security, you know, feeling very comfortable. So for the devotee, like Dhruva Maharaj, the experience of death was just like a stepping stone, you know, to life, actually, eternal life with Krishna. Otherwise, yeah, death is coming, and death will be a very fearful experience. We can take shelter of so many false and insignificant things. And time is gradually just pushing us closer to the moment of death. And then we'll be old people. We'll all be old. And the body will be breaking down. The mind will be becoming weak in many ways. And we'll be looking at our spiritual assets and finding them to be very scanty and not sufficient to keep us fixed and fearless in the face of death. Therefore, we want to build our spiritual assets. You know, we want to have strong relationships with devotees, very deep and substantial. We want to have accumulated many years of fixed devotional service. We want to have developed some kind of relationship of shelter in the holy name, you know, and chanting. We want our mind to be filled with impressions of the deities, and we want our heart to be beating, you know, to kirtan, basically. We want it to be through our mind all the time. And this is shelter. And when death comes, it will be a transition that is more like a deliverance, more like a release. Something, you know, like when you enter into a lake, you know, and you just feel, if anyone's been to the Dham and taken bath in the Ganges, it's like this. You know, sometimes after traveling to India, just getting to India is such a headache. Oh, people say, are you excited that you're going to the Dham? It's like, oh, I don't know, I'll find out on the plane, you know, just to get there, to get the money together, to pack, to make all the arrangements, all the red tape, and to arrive in the Dham, and then, you know, the long plane ride. You know, students in South Africa are telling me, it's so exciting, international travel, I really want to travel, you know, when I graduate, travel, you know, but then you're on the plane, it's just like putting your body through a washing machine, you know, you're ground down, you're exhausted, you're tired, you know, either from watching movies or just the atmosphere of the plane, you know, your eyes become dry and red and your body is aching because in every way these economy seats are totally uncomfortable. And so such long queues, you know, carrying your overweight hand luggage and then arriving after so many hours of without sleep and, you know, the journey to Mayapur, either by car on that road, you know, or by train, you know, which is also exhausting. And then you arrive, and if you're lucky, you know, your guest house booking may have been remembered by the reception desk, if you're lucky. Otherwise, you'll find yourself on a rickshaw going from place to place, or your friends that you agreed to stay with, they've gone out for a few days, you know, to Ekachakra or something ecstatic. Anyway, finally, you might find a place to put your bags, and you head out with your gumsha to the Ganga, you know. Oh, And the Ganges is really like a mother, you know, something amazing, you know, very vast and just flowing endlessly, you know, to the ocean, just, whoosh, you know. So just walking your way, you know, across the road, you know, from Sridhar Mayapur, and then up a little bit to find a quiet place, and then through these date palms, through this little village, and to the bank of the Ganges, you know, and then finding some sandy place where you can just offer your obeisances, offer some water to the Ganga, and then just immerse yourself in the waters. And immediately you just feel so much mode of passion, so much mode of ignorance, mundane goodness, anxieties, troubles, what to speak of mundane travel dirt, and it's just like just being washed away, you know. Oh, very peaceful. You really do feel that you're taking shelter, you know, of the Ganges. And you see devotees just lying on their back, you know, with their toes poking up out of the Ganges, just like, and they don't care where they're going. They just float. Sometimes I'm wondering, you know, is that safe? Is that safe? But devotees just do it, you know. They have their japa beads wrapped around their neck and they're just flat on their back, you know, just floating down the Ganges. Goodness knows where they'll wash up. I guess they'll get out somewhere and, you know, find their way back. But it's such a nice thing. So to leave this body and such consciousness would really be something. You know, because the body is really going to put us through it. It's really, really going to be difficult in material terms. But if the mind and the consciousness are attached to Krishna's lotus feet, then the experience will be something different. I think I'll finish there. If anyone, I remember, Yadarani, you told me about your experience of being with Lalasa Mayi when she left her body, one of Radhadesha's residents. And you said, like, her body was finished, she couldn't even see anymore, totally bedridden. But just in the last days, in the last day in particular, she said, oh, why have they turned on the light? You know, they turned on the light. And you said, no, the lights are off. Huh? It's so bright, yeah, so effulgent. And you're going, no, the lights are all dimmed, it's the night time. She's going, no, it's very bright, it's very bright. And then in that effulgence, she saw Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, the residents of Vrindavan, all coming and arriving, and Krishna, Srimati Radharani, and then she was saying, why, I think I want to go with them, but I can't go, you should also come, and why don't you come? And Yadarani was like, okay, I'll come, you were holding her hand. And so then she became peaceful, you know, that okay, we'll go together. And then she left her body. She went. She became quiet. Huh? She went. Yeah, she went and you stayed. So this is something amazing. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada's purport, I'm sorry I didn't really mine an awful lot out of it by paying deep attention there. Prasajati kvapi lata puja shrayas tad ashraya vyakta padad vijas priha gvachit karachit dhari chakritas trasan sakyam vidhate bhakakanka gridhrai. Sometimes the living entity in the forest of material existence takes shelter of creepers and desires to hear the chirping of the birds in those creepers. Being afraid of roaring lions in the forest, he makes friends with cranes, herons, and vultures. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any devotees have some comment or something? Oh. I was just walking through this, you know, where the reception desk is in BLS, and there was a book there. Oh, I can't quite remember the name, but it had pictures of the faces of the devotees that it was describing. It's a beautiful sort of a orangey, golden, brown hardcover book. So I just read through. What was it called? Huh? Do you know it? Yeah, compiled, and many of the articles are by Giriraj Maharaj. It also had the story of Acha Vigraha, one of his disciples who left an artist who left a body in Vrindavan. Yeah, it's a very new book. I haven't seen it before. Yeah. But they're very enlivening stories. They're my favorite kind of story, practically. Okay, Hare Krishna.